Time to get our local view. Find all he's up to on the front page of the Register Guard sports section. Catch up online, registerguard.com. Follow along on Twitter. The handle is at AustinMeekRG. Austin, good Tuesday to you. How's it going?
Hey, Steve. I'm doing good. How are you?
Awesome. So Oregon blows out Colorado Saturday. You wrote about the playing of O Canada on Senior Day. It's kind of funny. Dylan Ennis says he really doesn't know the words. I'm an NHL fan. I was singing along. But we know who is definitely not going to be playing home games anymore. If you had to kind of check your gut and make a wager, another Ontario native, Dylan Brooks. I know this is almost like a Freeman question. You think he's going to go, stay, or do you think what they do as far as the run they make matters to him?
Well, remembering how we both absolutely nailed the Royce Freeman thing, I'm sure that I'm going to be dead on with this one.
Two in a row.
I think I'm actually going to take the cop out and say that it does sort of depend on what happens with Oregon the rest of the way. I think if Oregon makes a deep run, if they get to a Final Four or even win a national championship, I think Dylan Brooks should go. He's not going to probably climb into that lottery pick range, maybe not climb into the first round.
Right.
He kind of is what he is. He's a great college player, and I think he has expanded his game this year. I mean, I've seen him put it on the floor and dunk on guys this year in ways that I don't remember seeing from him earlier in his career. So I do think he's taken a step forward with his game this year. So for me, I think it comes down to what happens in the tournament. If Oregon makes a deep run and Dylan Brooks plays well, I think he very well could look at it like, hey, my value's never going to be any higher than it is now. I should go and see what happens. But no. If Oregon were to get bounced early, I could see a scenario where Dylan felt like there was some unfinished business, felt like the college game has treated him well and that, he's not going to hurt himself by coming back another year. So I think a lot of it does depend on what happens in March.
I'm not going to allow yourself to call that a cop-out because that's kind of what I think. And as we said, we know how right we are about this stuff. There's no question Dana Altman has taken this program to a new level. But for an Oregon, it's not every year you have a legit chance to get to the Final Four. Is it Final Four or bust? If they go to the Elite Eight again, you can't call that disappointing, can you?
No, I don't think Oregon, the position they're in, I don't think Oregon can ever be disappointed with an Elite Eight. Maybe if they make the tournament the next 10 years as a top five seed and don't get to a Final Four, maybe then we can talk about whether an Elite Eight is disappointing. But I don't think for this group it would be a disappointment. But I do think the sights are set higher than that. And especially if this is the last go-round for this group, there is there's some pressure around trying to clear that last hurdle and get to a Final Four. We don't know what's going to happen with this group. It's not just Dylan Brooks. Jordan Bell, if you look at the mock drafts, Jordan Bell is the highest projected Oregon player on a lot of those. Tyler Dorsey has gotten some run as an NBA prospect. So Oregon can have all those guys back next year. They could have none of them back. But if this is the last go-round for this group, would an Elite Eight be disappointing? No. But there would be a sense that they didn't quite maybe max out all the potential they had if they don't take that last step to the Final Four.
No, that makes sense. And you actually wrote about it, that it was a big break to get this group together with Boucher and Ennis, with Brooks and Dorsey coming back. But if I remember correctly, what you said I thought was interesting. Regardless, you don't anticipate them falling off the map, be it the players who will be back or the staff. You still think this program continues to kind of hum along and operate at a high level?
Yeah, I think Dana Altman has the program on really solid footing. You look at who they've got coming in next year, Troy Brown, a McDonald's All-American from Las Vegas. Peyton Pritchard, I think, is going to be the man very soon. I mean, you can tell right now he's got the potential, but it's not his team yet. So he's deferring a little bit. to Dylan Brooks and Tyler Dorsey, but when it's his time, I think Peyton Pritchard is going to be the man for Oregon. So I think they're set up to be good for a while, but can they be this good next year? It's hard to say, because there was a lot that had to come together for this team to be what it is. You know, you think about Chris Boucher and Dylan Ennis, and those guys are both sort of complementary players on this team.
Yeah.
But they're absolutely crucial players to this team. You know, Dylan Ennis, I did not expect that he would be a guy who would start every game, but they've needed him to do that, and he's been really solid in that role. And Chris Boucher, I didn't expect him to be the sixth man coming off the bench, but he's adapted to that role, and he's been really solid doing that. And they've absolutely needed both of those guys. They're not real deep. That's one question mark with Oregon going into the tournament, is their depth. They basically play seven guys, but the seven they play are really good. And it's funny to think about how two of those guys, last April, were waiting for a waiver from the NCAA just to have a chance to play.
No, I think actually Ennis is one of the most pleasant surprises. I thought he'd be okay. I didn't think he'd be outstanding like he has. There's been a lot of talk about the voice of Matt Knight Arena and Autzen Stadium. Don Essig just celebrated 50 years on the job. But what you wrote, I got to be honest, I had no idea. So was it last year they tried to make basketball a two PA announcer sport? For folks who didn't know that or weren't aware, what all was involved there? And obviously it didn't work out too well.
Yeah, it was an experiment that they tried last year. I guess you could say it was an experiment that went awry. And I understand why they did it, because you got to think back 2 years ago. There was a lot of talk about Matthew Knight Arena and the atmosphere there.
Yep.
And what can we do to improve the atmosphere at Matthew Knight Arena? I wrote a bunch of columns about it. So I think one of the ideas that Oregon had was to bring in a second PA announcer to work with Don Essig to do the pregame lineups and some of the in-game promos and stuff. And I don't fault Oregon for giving it a try. And I think, it was different. They were trying to appeal to a different, maybe a different demographic, but the chemistry just wasn't there. So they scrapped that this year. They went back to just Don on the mic. And I think it's probably better that way. But it was an interesting experiment, and it definitely stirred some strong reactions from people. When I was at games, people definitely talked about it. It was a topic of conversation the whole year.
I'll tell you what, what helps the atmosphere? If you win every single game you play there.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's what we've learned the last 2 years, is all the stuff you talk about, fan experience and atmosphere, and what do we do to improve the fan experience? Just win. That's all there is to it. If you win, it's going to be a great atmosphere. That's simple.
Now, so we mentioned Don's been here a half century, and me being from New York and being older, it was always, everybody knows the voice of Yankee Stadium, Bob Shepard. He also did Giant Games for a million years. And be it Kansas basketball or football or Kansas City Royals, Arrowhead, I'm thinking events you attended frequently. Was there like a legendary PA guy? I mean, that was the voice of, say, Fog Allen Fieldhouse or Arrowhead or anything like that?
I'm trying to think. Not necessarily a PA guy. I mean, I have great memories of radio guys.
Right.
You think of Max Falkenstein with Kansas, or obviously Denny Matthews with the Royals.
Sure.
Mitch Holthus does the Chiefs. So a lot of radio guys I remember as a kid. But, in a way, Don Essig is kind of the last of a dying breed in terms of the in-house PA guy. Because Don mentioned this in the column, and I think it's true. It's just sports have gone away from that sort of traditional, stately, very professional voice behind the mic. A lot of it has become a lot more theatrical. It's sort of the NBA-style atmosphere where you've got somebody shouting on the mic and, the lights and the music, and it's all really dramatic. The live game experience has really gone that way in a lot of places. And that's why I think it's cool that Don Essig still is the voice, in the arena for Oregon basketball, because it is kind of a throwback to a different time. And there's so much that has changed. I mean, There's nothing you could recognize about Oregon basketball now compared to 1967, except that the guy on the mic, the guy doing the PA, is still Don Essick. I think that's pretty cool.
It's awesome. I'm so psyched everybody's been kind of jumping on this as we continue with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. So speaking of guys you've covered, West Virginia's beating Texas, then at halftime, Bob Huggins, the Mountaineer coach, who has a history of heart issues, man, he fell to his knees. You got to cover him as the Wildcat, the Kansas State coach. I think it was 10 or 11 years ago. I've always thought he's a kind of an interesting guy, kind of a low talker. What do you remember him, the days you covered him?
Well, that was a pretty scary scene last night.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I saw that live, and it really was scary. Because, like you said, he's got a history of heart problems, had a massive heart attack when he was coaching at Cincinnati. And I can honestly say that Bob Huggins is one of my favorite coaches in any sport. I had the chance to cover him one year when he was at Kansas State. And he's totally different from sort of the public perception of him. If you're just kind of generally aware of Bob Huggins, you might have a perception of who he is, and you know, coming from Cincinnati, he had this reputation as being kind of a renegade or a guy who didn't really care about the academics, didn't really care if his players got in trouble, kind of a win at all costs type guy, and that is part of who he is, I guess, part of his past at least. But I found him just to be a really interesting guy. Has this incredible sense of humor. It's very dry. It's very deadpan. And you even saw it last night. I don't know if you caught it on the broadcast. So he goes down. He goes down to his knees on the floor, and it turns out that I guess his defibrillator that he has implanted kicked on. So, like, he's being shocked back to life here on the floor of the arena. And you look up, and he looks at one of his players and says, "This is all your fault," which is a classic Bob Huggins line.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
Great Bob. That's his sense of humor in a nutshell right there, to be on the edge of death and have a great quip to throw at somebody. He had so many of those great sarcastic lines, and I really enjoy him as a coach, and I hope he's taken care of himself, because obviously, he had a history with alcohol. He had a DUI toward the end of his time at Cincinnati, and had the heart problems that we talked about. And he's never been the most svelte individual.
No,
it looks like he's maybe put on a little weight even since I covered him. But I hope he's taking care of himself, because I think he's great for college basketball. He's got a great team this year. I hope he can coach a while longer.
Yeah, for folks who aren't familiar with the entirety of his biography, it's important to know about his dad, Charles, the fact that Huggins pursued a master's degree. So for those who say he doesn't have any interest in education, it's kind of very surface, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, he's a very, very smart guy.
Oh, yeah.
One of the smartest coaches I've ever been around. And, you know, his Cincinnati teams did have that reputation. There was a great line one of the columnists that covered his teams wrote about how he was the only coach who had a player arrested for punching a police horse. I don't know the circumstances would compel somebody to punch a police horse, but that was one of the things that was on the rap sheet for Bob Huggins' teams at Cincinnati. But a great coach, and kind of an underrated coach, and he's sort of found his, I think he's kind of found his home at West Virginia. He's from West Virginia. And that's the other thing about him. He really was just kind of a, small town coal miner background, a guy who, really was just kind of a small town guy at heart, which I don't think a lot of people understood about him.
No, he's an interesting guy, and obviously he played at West Virginia. And the only other instance I could think of anybody punching a horse was Alex Karras in Blazing Saddles. good stuff as always,
yeah,
Austin.
References.
Yep. I much appreciate your time. And are you going down south with the team, or are you staying?
I will not be in the Bay Area this week. Steve's down there. I'm sort of gathering up my strength for the March run here. So I'll be on the road starting in a couple weeks.
All right. Thanks a lot, Austin. Have a good one.
All right. See you, Steve.
Take it easy.